Welcome to Fundraising Stories with Female Founders. I'm Julia Elliott Brown, the founder and CEO of Enter the Arena. I'm a serial entrepreneur and an expert in raising investment and business growth. Our mission at Enter the Arena is to empower female founders to fly through pre-raise and investment and onto the exponential growth of their business with investment expertise and business coaching. Here we share the stories of inspirational female founders who've raised investment to inspire you to do the same. You'll hear their honest accounts of what it was really like to secure funding, the highs, the lows, and the challenges they experienced on the journey. And along the way, we'll discuss top tips for how you can be successful too. Now, if you're a woman that suffered from stretch marks when you were pregnant, like so many of us do, including myself, you're going to love hearing our fundraising story today. I'm talking with Sophie Hooper, who recently raised £500,000 for her groundbreaking femtech business, Secret Saviours. Now, Secret Saviours is a stretch mark prevention band for pregnant women. And the band is made of this groundbreaking textile technology. You pull it over your bump and it diffuses tension across the skin so that stretch marks don't form. And amazingly, it's a whopping 82% success rate. Over 8,000 women have been saved from stretch marks to date. Hallelujah. And I can't wait to hear more about the business and all about Sophie's journey for raising investment for growth. So welcome, Sophie. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. So let's start at the beginning then. So you joined Secret Saviours in September 2011 alongside the original founder, Stephen Barker. So tell us more about kind of how the whole stretch mark product was invented and why the two of you came together to take it to market.
Yeah, it was actually 2017. And I was working at Saatchi & Saatchi. I was lucky enough for them to give me a little section of Saatchi. It's called Team Saatchi. And I've been doing it for quite a long time. And I went to a dinner party down near where I lived. And I met this vascular surgeon called Stephen Barker. Anyway, we got chatting and he said that he had a product that he'd invented to prevent stretch marks. So one thing led to another, being a woman who has stretch marks with two children and having a lot of friends that are the same as me, just not wanting to ever wear a bikini again or take your clothes off without keeping the lights off. And to cut a very long story short, we thought, right, let's do this. So I left and we embarked on this roller coaster journey that's been going for quite a few years. The product was clinically proven, which already Stephen had done that, which was fantastic. But it wasn't really the sort of product that you'd ever really want to put on a pregnant bump or use as a pregnant woman, because it was like a bandage and the cream and the gel that comes with it to help it work was sort of like foot cream, which wasn't very nice. So set about building a brand, turning it into something that you'd love to wear, and making the pads, the dermal support technology, as we call it, as you said, that sit against the skin to prevent the stretch marks, comfortable and not allergic in any way. And this is what we've come up with. I think you can see these are the little pads that you wear against the screen. So we set off. I put every single scrap of my savings and my family savings and all of my friends' savings into it. And as you said, we've very slowly but surely we've saved, and I like to say saved because I really do feel that it is saving them from stretch marks, because lots of people do say, well, there's nothing wrong with having them, and there absolutely isn't anything wrong with them. But if you could choose to not have them, I don't think you would. And I do have this a lot, especially on social media, kind of coming up against women saying that it's not nice to smash body shaming, but I really do feel that it's not, because if you could choose not to have them, you wouldn't. And now this kind of gives you a choice because it works so beautifully. And I think what's exciting for me is that it's completely unique. There's nothing like it. We've scoured the world. There's nothing that you can wear that is actually textile technology to prevent stretch marks. And it works, and we'll come on to talking about that when you come to investors. They just can't believe that it works. They kind of think, how come no one's ever done this before? And you have to say, well, no one really cared enough about women's bodies to work out how stretch marks formed in the first place. And we have some amazing reviews. I mean, I can't get over the reviews. They're kind of big, outpourings of love, really, and I call them love letters. And if you're ever having a bad day, I kind of read some of them and it really cheers me up. So I feel that it's having an impact out there, and reading the reviews, and even the husbands write in and say, my wife is so happy, thank you so much. That's very exciting to me.
That's incredible. And you must have had huge faith in the potential for it to kind of quit a really successful corporate career. I mean, I imagine your background in terms of the kind of brands that you were working on, your expertise in this sector must have helped you make that decision.
It did. I think I've been there for 13 years and I was coming to the end, and I didn't want to commute anymore, and my children were becoming teenagers and being very mischievous, and I needed to keep a bit more of an eye on them. But I can't say that it's been an easy ride. I mean, I think everyone knows that throwing in a salary like that and to into the unknown is actually a bit mad. But I absolutely knew that this was going to work. I still sit here now. I just know it's going to. And I think we've got proof of concept now with all the people that want to, that have used it, and also the interest that we've had recently from America, just people just raving about it. Mm-hmm. So yes, it was a risk, but I think the strength of conviction to know that there's a need for it, it solved a previously unsolvable problem, and it was just overcoming the challenges of the product. For example, we were a tiny little brand, we went to P&G and a L'Oreal. Unbelievable cynicism from women, you know, oh, there's nothing you can do with stretch marks, you're either going to get them or you're not. And they didn't really even believe the clinical trial. And still we get people saying, well, it's all rubbish, until I see the clinical trial, I'm not going to believe it. And then the brilliant thing is we can back it up with proper clinical evidence, which actually just muffles them. And I think overcoming the cynicism of women was the hardest, was really, really difficult. And just try and get that, to start building a base of reviews and a digital footprint and get everything going. Because also the other challenge with this product is that you wear it when you're 14 weeks and then you don't know whether it's going to work until after you have a baby, which is 6 months later. And then you have a baby, which is a life-changing event. And then you completely forget about your stretch mark prevention product until, I mean, even really good friends of mine haven't given us reviews until a year after their babies have been born. So I think all of these challenges have been quite hard for investors at the beginning to sort of look at that and think, you know, it's taken us a while to build up a bank of credibility and start the sales rolling and get that word of mouth going.
Okay. So that first bit there, so it was, you put your own money in and you said you managed to get some friends to also kind of come in with you.
Yes.
To get you through that first phase. So did you have a sense for, actually, I'm going to need X amount to get me to launch? Did you sort of wing it, kind of, out of it?
Well, I have to say, coming out of Saatchi's, you think you know a lot about advertising, and then you go into marketing and it all changes, and then you kind of go into the fundraising and entrepreneurial world, and it's another thing altogether. Yes, I knew we'd need more money, mainly because whether we like it or not, our competitors are big and they've got deep pockets. So we're up against the likes of Bio Oil and Mamma Mio and Palmer's, all of whom are gigantic colossuses when it comes to marketing spend and power, with deep pockets. So yes, we did know that. So it was really to get things off the ground on a sort of a small level, just to find out whether people liked it, whether it worked, and just sort of kind of iron out any of the problems that we had, which we did. And I think the product now is absolutely perfect. I mean, I would say that, wouldn't I? But it really is. The pads are perfect. The creamless gels smell amazing. But we always knew that it was going to take more money marketing-wise to properly get some traction. So that's what primarily this raise was for. And the other thing that the raise was for was Stephen, the inventor, had registered it as a global patent, which it's got. But upkeep of a global patent is huge amount of money a year, so it's over £50,000 a year for the territories.
Wow.
Which, for a little business that's only selling in the UK, is quite a big chunk to have to afford out of it. So the answer is yes, I did know, but it was a question of timing, and also, and I'm sure we'll come on to this later, it was really finding the investors that it clicked with, because there were troubles.
let's talk about them. So So you did that early bit yourself with some friends, you know, to get you so far, but then the next round was to go out and get 500,000 for that first kind of launch bit. So did you decide straight away to get angels on board, or what was your thing?
Stephen and I both had a slight, we didn't really want to get venture capitals involved at that early stage. And actually when I first met you, we were looking at a lot of these big funds, and they weren't even interested unless you were turning over 500,000 a year or whatever. So that wasn't really an option. We set out to raise the money primarily to go to the next level. But the challenges were that we didn't, if you looked back at our sales history, it was quite patchy, and it was looking for someone. We needed to find angels who had a kind of emotional connection with the product and who liked me. I think that's been the reality. I start off doing the meetings, and then Stephen comes in to give the credibility. But I've been lucky enough to find the most amazing angel I could ever want, who is a female and who has stretch marks. So immediately there was a synergy. And after 45 minutes, she said, I'm investing, and that's it. And that, not only did that give me enormous confidence to go on and raise, so she put in half of the money, and then I raised the other half kind of off the back of the confidence I had with her. But I think I had talked to a lot of people before, a lot of them being men. Men didn't understand what stretch marks were, really. What were they, a problem? Oh, I've asked my wife, and she doesn't have any, so I don't think I'm in. Or I only invest in tech. And however much I said, well, this kind of is wearable tech, and it's you know, it is a big femtech. It's very underfunded, and it's important to women psychologically and physically to try and come out of pregnancy without these. No, they weren't having it. So some of them didn't. I mean, it was so, some people didn't even know what a support band was. You know, I was really starting on the back, but I did get a man to invest, and he was the most unlikely man ever, who actually made his money in data shredding. Mm-hmm. I think when you do get one that understands it, and in fact, I've been talking to someone recently, it's just such a revelation. And when they can actually see the opportunity and the impact that it's going to have on women, well, you know, globally, hopefully, that they don't have, they can have babies and not have stretch marks, it's fantastic. But they are quite few and far between. And I think the great thing about finding my female angel is that she has given me so much more confidence to go up, because she completely believes in it. I mean, she talks about it to everybody, and I have sessions with her once a month. It's given me that real kind of, that's it, I'm going to go for it. And I also think that having in myself, I needed to have that lift to properly be able to sell it. Because I have done jobs in my life before where, you know, when you're trying to sell something, whether it's a music track or whatever, you don't totally believe in it. You can't sell it. And even though I did, having someone like that who buys into that vision is just amazing.
But it's interesting, you know, you say you've got the kind of male investor and the female investor. Did you find, and they're coming at it from quite different angles, aren't they? Did you find that you had to pitch to them in a very, very different way? One was where you're talking to somebody who totally gets the problem because she's experienced it. And the other one wasn't. So was your pitch very different for the two?
I had to be a lot less emotional with the male investor. Having said that, he'd gone away and he'd done his due diligence and he'd asked a lot of people. And even though that his data shredding business, it overlapped into certain pharmacy chains, and he had quite a few contacts. So he'd asked them all. And it took me a long time to get him over the line, I have to say, to the point where I was almost going completely grey. But he did. And I think he said, I've asked lots of people and they just say it's a no-brainer. So it's much more rational with him. And for him, it's all about sales, 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 sales. You know, he kind of glazes over when I talk about the emotional and physical impacts of it. He just sees that there's a gap in the market, get out there and sell it. So it's quite a different pitch. But I also think with him, he's all very much into the financials, and I have to talk about, not be shy at all about A, being transparent about what we're doing and how we're going to do it, and being very upfront about money and dilution and valuations and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But I definitely have learned that over the years. I think at the beginning, I very much, I don't, I think coming from a creative industry, it didn't feel natural to me to talk about this is what I'm looking for, this is why, and this is the valuation, and this is why the company's valued at that. But I've really practiced it. And I know a lot of women don't do that. So actually, I make myself do it straight away. Without looking kind of too forceful, and you know, I say what I'm looking for, and people really appreciate it, because then immediately they know where they are with it. So
yeah, I think that's right, being absolutely clear about what the ask is, really focusing on the outcomes for the investor. You know, what's in it for them, what's, you know, what are they going to get?
Yeah. And the other interesting thing is, which is a brilliant bit of advice that I was given by somebody, was and it's how I got him over the line, was I asked him to have a coffee with me because I wanted to ask his advice. I didn't set him up saying, will you invest in the business or anything. I went along and I said, this is what I'm doing, this is what I've got. And I just completely transparently told him everything. And then I said, so I now need to raise 250,000. And then he said, I could invest it. And I thought, isn't that interesting? It's going along and asking for advice. So that you take off all the pressure. You can be as honest and about the state of the business and yourself, rather than doing a pitch. It's a completely different way around. And actually, you know, if you end up walking away with some good advice, brilliant. But I've used it quite a few times, actually, and everyone has said, oh, I'll invest. In fact, quite some of my girlfriends, we had lunch, and I was particularly wanted one of them to invest, and actually all the other three did.
It's about creating energy, and they kind of go, I want to be a part of that. You don't have to say it. They just come along.
Yeah.
But that comes from your confidence, doesn't it, about what you're saying, confidence in the business. So, I'm interested to know how many meetings you had to have? I want to know, roughly. And then also kind of how did you find those people to have meetings with?
So I think I probably, well, over the course of the time that I've been involved in this business, I actually can't put a number on it. 20, 25, I've stood up in front of London Business Angels at Lloyd's in London. I mean, disastrously, because you don't know who's going to be in that audience. Oh, and guess what? It's all men. And so you have to think, oh God, how am I going to start this off? So an awful lot. And some of them get all hung up about the IP and it's quite demoralizing, actually, and it takes a lot of work, because as the time goes on, you then have to update your business plan constantly, and at the beginning it was chasing people down and thinking, right, who do I know that might know someone, and it actually was horrible. But how I found my angel in more ways than one was through someone I used to work with, started working at another company, and he knew a chap who then knew this lady. So it was kind of fortuitous. Mm. But I think he thought she'd be interested in it because she's a doctor of gene therapy, and it couldn't be a more perfect match. So I was very lucky with that. And then with the male investor, it actually came through a friend of mine who I used to work with ages ago. He used to be one of her childhood friends. So very, very random. So all the usual kind of ways of, oh, go and talk to a fund here or do that, just didn't work at all.
I think that early stage where you still got a lot to prove, where you're asking people to take a reasonably big risk in backing you, that you exploiting your network is just you've got to start there. And I think a lot of people are quite afraid of doing that. But what's interesting about what you've just said there, Sophie, is that often people are sort of 3, 4, 5 steps removed from your immediate network. People say, oh, I don't know anyone in my immediate network that's got money. Yeah. I always say it doesn't matter. If you get the word out there to everybody you know, you just don't know where it's going to lead, because somebody knows somebody who knew somebody who might be the right fit.
Yes, or you go along for one of those, I'd love your advice, of which I've got a meeting next week, actually, who I'm not sure that he's going to be right for this, because I think he's involved in another oil. Mm. But I know that he knows a lot more people. So if I also think it's about having a great product, but also more and more, I'm meeting people at the moment from, a different, not angels, from family funds, we can talk about them. They buy into the person. Yes, it's got to be a good product, and obviously all the due diligence has got to stack up, but I think they've got to see belief in the person. And I'm not going to say to everyone that's raising money, oh, you've got to have some skin in the game. But my God, it does absolutely change, because I do sometimes, if it's appropriate, I do say this has to work because this is it for me. I've put everything into this and it's not going to fail. And I think they can either see determination or desperation or whatever it is that they like, but that they, that girl is not going to let this fail.
I think an investor would be concerned if they didn't see you backing yourself to the hill. I mean, they really would be.
Yeah, but I mean, some people don't have the luxury. I mean, I was incredibly lucky. I forced my mother into equity release. but I was incredibly lucky, and I know some people don't have that opportunity. And it makes a huge difference. And it's what makes me absolutely get out of bed and get going every single morning. Unlike when I worked for someone else, and where you're actually getting out of bed to make someone else a nicer life in the future, you care about it a lot more. You know that it can't, and it's also too good not to. And I see so many, a couple of the people that I've seen in pictures that we talked about earlier, two of those were just so brilliant, and I could see the same thing kind of in them. You know, it's their duty to get this out there. They're not going to stop. So. Yeah,
those qualities around your passion, your drive, your commitment, those are the things that, do you feel those are the things that are really tipped investors into backing you?
That's what they tell me, and that's what I do feel. And I'm now talking to because yes, already it's all going, you know, the board have said, right, we need another product. And I say, okay, well, we need to raise some more money then at an enhanced valuation, which is fine. And talking to the family funds is another whole interesting thing, and they very much buy into the people, because I think a lot of these family funds, they don't want to make ridiculous investments, obviously, and it's very tough to get through the due diligence, but I think they want to have someone involved with their family fund that they like. And I really do think that I was talking to one of them the other day, and she said this personality is absolutely everything. I think that is key.
Yeah, well, let's talk about family funds in a minute, because I'm interested in exploring that with you. I just want to kind of ask you a couple of questions around running that first round, the one you did where you raised $500,000. I mean, I know we've talked about how time consuming it can be to raise finance. I know, you know, as a mum with two teenage children, that must have been quite challenging for you. How did you manage to keep the business and your life running effectively during that time?
Well, I don't actually have a life. I mean, I really have had to turn it all down, you know, not having a regular salary necessarily. I've got a very, very small team, and there's me and another lady, and that's it. So we just worked very, very hard all the time, and weekends in between things. And she's got kids that are younger than mine. And we just did. We worked really, really hard on getting that business plan absolutely spot on. But it was challenging, and I am very lucky to, I mean, the girls are sort of late teens, and they are very emotionally invested in this business as well, and they've sort of seen it all kind of develop. And on the times where you do feel really low and you're sobbing into your scrambled egg because you just think, how am I going to find this money, they were amazing. And I think you really do find out who your friends are, and we kind of, I think she'd agree if she was here, we look at each other and we think we are in this together. Because it does sometimes feel like you really are on your own, and you know, you can't help your mind start wandering off about the what if we don't get this money, and you have to keep turning it back, thinking we've got to keep going, keep pushing. And I think for me, well, time will tell, I think the round at the beginning of the year was really the hardest, because we had no real sales traction. It really was very much her buying into the product and the business. And I feel that this next round that I'm going, I'm actually quite enjoying it. and I also think that I've sort of tried to turn myself around a little bit with the help of my female angel, who sort of says, come on, people are lucky to be involved in this business. This is going to be massive. And, you know, we've got people asking us for to take it to China, and she's get them to pitch for it. Rather than us going, oh, would you like our product? Oh, that would be great. It's, no, get them to put proposals together, pitch, and then you decide. You're the one. And it's almost sort of taking the control back, because you're not in that slightly panicked mode of, oh my God, am I going to raise? Is everything going to go down? So I think the other bit of advice I've learnt the hard way is, don't leave it till the last minute to raise money, because then you are in that panic situation. Mm. And that definitely comes across in your in everything you do, actually. And you're much more likely to send irritating emails, ill-advised, late at night. Have you got my stuff? And this time, you know, we've got this time around, when I'm raising money to make a stretch mark prevention bra, which I'm really excited about, because it's not just pregnancy that you get stretch marks on your boobs. This time round, we've got sales traction. I feel I've got really good support from my other two investors, and I'm actually enjoying it. It's kind of like bringing a joyful, it's like a gift, I think, to the people.
That switch in your confidence is the key, because you just feel so sure and convinced of what you're doing now.
Yeah. I mean, I used to dread investor meet. I used to really have to get really pumped up to go, because I you know, especially with the male, you know, the same old questions, or how do you know it's going to work? Disputing the facts, you know, it's not big enough business. And actually, you know, this year especially, there's been some real advances in investors investing into femtech. LV have done a fantastic, that breast pump, and it's kind of more in the news, and it's all kind of coming out that people haven't invested into products for women. And it's a great thing to be able to talk to and get people on the bandwagon to say, come on, we need to be on that. So I'm talking to two founders.
Riding that wave of actually, everybody is talking about femtech in the investment world now. So it's on people's radar, isn't it?
Relevant, yes. And the whole impact investment. Everyone, everywhere I go at the moment, you know, sustainability, impact investment, blah. And this is, I think, a product that fits into that mold, because it does have a psychological and physical impact, especially on mental health for women, and this whole health and wellness revolution that's very popular. So I mean, and with the family funds, I've talked to one in LA who is a woman, but representing a fund for two men, and they're also quite invested in the baby vitamin, organic baby vitamin. So that's a very interesting one. And I would love to get American money. And she's actually put me in touch with this vitamin company who are going to be launching prenatal vitamins and fertile. And so I'm going, oh, this would be fantastic if we could partner with them. So I'm very excited about that. And then another one, it's a Kenyan family fund, who's a 25-year-old man who's totally into sport. You would never think he would even think about stretch marks, and especially the background he's come from, he probably doesn't see that many women with stretch marks, but he absolutely loves it. And I do say at the end, can I just say thank you for being so positive as a man about this product, and he loves that. So that's completely, the family fund thing is completely different to dealing with an angel, but it's exciting as well that they want to come in.
So let's talk about this round then. So you did, the last round was $500,000, which you did earlier on in 2018. So you're raising again reasonably soon.
Yes.
So how much are you going to raise this time? And sort of, I guess the question is, do you wish you raised a bit more last time so that you weren't straight out on this fundraise again? Because it's not that long, is it, since you closed the round? That must be quite exhausting.
Yes, and it could on paper look like we'd frittered the money away, but there were two problems. We had the 500 came in two tranches, so that was a massive mistake. Some people say they like tranche, but it really wasn't, because it meant that we could not get a really good run at the marketing. So we were a little bit behind. The other thing that happened was that a retailer in Australia hasn't paid us. So we which was, you hear it a lot. Anyway, so we were kind of behind on that, plus patents. So yes, I do wish I'd raised a bit more, but actually that was at the beginning. That was, it, you know, 8 months ago. The valuation's now gone up. That was at 3 million. We're now out at a valuation of 4 million, with sales behind us. And some people go, oh, that's ridiculous, but I'm going for it because I think the business has been de-risked by one, proof of sales, and two, my wonderful investors and their connections. And we are raising for, you know, ramping up our marketing and getting a new product in, which I think is going to be brilliant because it can only scale the business faster because we've got two products for a pregnant woman rather than one. And the marketing spend will be split across two products. So that's, we want to start on R&D in the Q3, Q4 for launching Q1.
Okay.
So we're raising $250. Sorry, that's going back to your original.
It's kind of like a top up round.
Yes. And now the American thing has come up because they obviously are very keen on taking it to America, which has always been the nirvana for me. I just wanted to wait till we were really in a good position over here. Everyone's sort of discussing, right, middle of next year, maybe we'll go out again, but maybe the family funds will come in for that. So.
So are you thinking family funds for this round? Is that your plan? So tell me more about why family funds and how you go about reaching out, finding family funds, reaching out to them.
Well, they have both come from my angel lady and her network, which isn't really very much help, is it?
It shows you how the choice you made and the investors you brought in the first round was actually really important because they then bring their connections. So actually, it's one of the things that people should look out for, isn't it? When in that,
yes. And not being afraid to ask. Mm-hmm. Ask your current investors who else they think they might put. And if you've got the right one, which, you know, they can't stop talking about it to people. So they are quite. That's how that came up. That's how they came about. And why? It wasn't a deliberate choice for family fund money. I think it just so happens that the Kenyan money, they historically invest in real estate and they wanted to do something a bit more fun because of the younger generation. And I also feel that there's a much bigger appetite to follow with both. I'm not the expert on family funds, but I feel that if it works, they will then follow. Whereas I think angels, certain types of angels might not want to. Mm-hmm. My male angel has said that he loves the business, but he's not in a position to follow. That's fine. My female angel, I think she probably would, but I think she also sees the value of getting other people and other people's experiences, especially from other countries with other big pots of money potentially available to sit on the board and widen the knowledge brought into the company.
Mm. Do you think you'd ever consider crowdfunding in the future? Is that
Well, we did go on to Crowdcube, and in fact it was an absolute disaster because I don't think we're the right business for a crowdfunding platform unless there was a crowdfunding platform specifically set up for female or femtech businesses. Mm-hmm. My experience with crowdfunding was that we did have quite a few people come on. You have to raise a chunk yourself before they even do anything for you. But I just don't think that this product was the right product because the majority of people on those platforms are male. And I don't think that gives them bar bragging rights. That's what I always thought.
less social currency, isn't there? Than
the world of stretch marks. Yeah, right. Which is really sad, actually, because I'm sure, you know, people that have invented incredible things in the female world who've made a lot of money from them. Mm. I think it's quite narrow-minded, but it's not like investing in a sexy new beer or a car or an app or something. And I think we fell foul of that. Mm. And the other thing that we did it, but wow, it was a lot of work. I mean, you go live and then it's, you know, emails, updates. You know, you've got to email more of your database, and really, you know, you talked about digging into your friends and family. I mean, they literally kind of encourage you to dig into friends and families and grannies and aunts and, I mean, everything, so that you just for little investments. And I just didn't feel comfortable with it. So we came off that we didn't raise, and we came off, and it was a good lesson learned, and I won't do that again with a product like this.
Mm, yeah, I think you're right. It was the right thing to do. Well done for pulling it and not just kind of like watching it bleed to death.
The company that we went with obviously have forgotten about that because I get maybe 3 emails a week saying, hey, we've seen your brand, we'd love to have you on the platform.
Yeah. Let's finish up by just talking a little bit about valuation, because I think it's a great valuation that you had on that first round, 3 million, and now going out for 4, really strong. Did you how did you find the process of kind of coming up with your valuation? Was that tough?
Well, I had quite a lot of financial advice around it, because it's a bit like a house, isn't it? It's how much is someone prepared to pay? But then some people say, oh, but you haven't got sales, so how can you possibly be getting that valuation? I think the thing with this product is it's got a global IP. It's had a lot of money spent on it already, with the clinical trial, consumer trial, masses of R&D. And we felt that we added all of that up and added a little bit more on for investment we put in, and that was it. So when people say, how have you come to that valuation? I say, that's kind of the true amount of money that we've spent on getting the product where it is, which they do find hard to argue with, actually. And my justification of why it's gone up another million is we've taken 500,000 already. So that, if we're talking about money that's into the business, that's up 500. And also, I do talk about my angel lady, because she's so well connected with everybody that we will eventually want to exit to. And I think that the fact that I've actually managed to get her on the board as an NED, I think it adds, I think everyone would agree, it adds a huge amount of value, and it de-risks the business. Mm. Because when they see her in the board meeting, I mean, she was just absolutely amazing in my first board meeting. She actually said, I love this business. If I could put 15 million in now, I would. And anyone on that board, not that they were, would just went, wow. So I think knowing that I've got her behind me, I think that's how I justify it. And I've talked that story to both the family funds, and they don't even bat an eyelid.
Yeah.
Okay,
so the key is about having that story straight about showing them how you've come up with that valuation, rather than not having a justification for it.
Yes, but rather than just picking something out of the sky. And I think, I mean, quite a lot of people do that. And I have seen businesses that have got a lot of technical and IP and trials and things, and they're kind of slightly undervalued, I think, because that's a big old thing to have behind you that's valuable. Even if the worst case scenario happens, you can still, you're still sitting on that IP.
So finally, I want to ask you, is there anything you would have done differently on that first round if you could go back and do it again?
Yes, I don't know. The thing is, you can't actually, can you? You can't insist that the money comes in. What I'm doing with these family funds is, this is what I'm doing differently, is I'm saying I want to close by the end of July. And the reason is, I don't want to be doing this anymore. I've got to get on with the business. Everyone goes on holiday between August and October. And let's just get it done. I don't want to lose momentum. And I think, look, knowing that the male investor that I had, he wouldn't have been pushed. So actually, even if I'd have said, I want to close then, he wouldn't have been dictated to. So I think you've got to think about who your investors are. With my female investor, who everyone's probably hating now because everyone wants someone like her, if you want the money, it's easy, we'll close whenever you fancy it. So I think really getting really prepared, getting all the interest going at the same time, and then saying, I'm going to do meetings in this week and I want to close on X date, and give a reason. And if you don't have a reason, make some reasons up. I mean, it's not a made up reason about October, but then, I mean, August, but there's always these times in the year that mess everything up, you know, Easter, everything goes quiet for over the school holidays, and then it seems to tail on and longer. Christmas, disaster. So there are these things. So if you let the investment drag on and the due diligence drag on, it does actually become really time consuming, really nerve wracking. So I'm trying this, my new method with the family funds, and they seem to be fine with it.
Yeah. So controlling the timescales, being confident about that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And actually, having the confidence to say, this is what we're doing. If you want to come on, this is what we're doing. Even if they say, well, that's not going to, you'll find very quickly. I was speaking to some Chinese investors over the Christmas period, and I said, we're closing on the 7th of January. And you can flush out quite quickly whether they can or can't do that. And then you don't waste any more time on them, which is, again, people do string you along and then say, oh, sorry, can't do that. So set aside at least 3 months, maybe longer, and identify when you need the money 6 months in advance, ideally. Oh, God. Yeah.
You've done an amazing job. Goodness me. I mean, like, we need more of these kind of amazing female angels, don't we? It's just...
Well, we really do.
We really do. Where are you all? Come on out. Like, starting...
Well, actually, she wants to... we're starting a whole round of PR in September, and she said, oh, I want to do some PR, because she is a woman of wealth who actively wants to invest in female businesses and female entrepreneurs. So... watch that space.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure there's plenty of people that I could...
I'm not sharing them right now.
Thank you so much. I'm wishing you all the best with this round. Let's hope you do get it closed by the summer.
Yes.
Please keep us updated. And, you know, we look forward to more women being saved from stretch marks.
Yes. And by the bra as well.
Yes, so. Exactly. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sophie.
Thanks.
And thanks for joining us today. Bye-bye.
Thanks for following Fundraising Stories with Female Founders. This content is all provided to you for free, so if you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe so you never miss another one. Enter the Arena has helped hundreds of female founders fly through pre-raise and investment and onto the exponential growth of their business. Our first-hand experience, expert guidance, and proven programs help female founders unleash the Wonder Woman inside. To see if we can help you do the same, head over to www.enterthearena.co.uk. I'm Julia Elliott-Brown, and I look forward to talking with you soon.